We're in a dressing room. There appears to be 2,500 watts of IKEA light bulbs emblazoning. Ah, they're not.
They're not
new style.
They're not ecological.
They're the hot kind. I'm sat with Matt Locke, who has very recently just stepped off stage at the Media Future conference here in Dunleary, Dublin. How did it feel?
It's a good conference. You can tell it's quite a mixed crowd, which is always good. I like talking at conferences that aren't just ecosystem, so, you know, just like all TV or all games or all... There's a very broad mix, but no, it's great. I mean, I like Jack's events. It's the second time I've spoken here, and he always puts on a fantastic event.
It's predominantly women, the audience. Do you know why?
I wouldn't profess to know why at all. It's another good thing. I think, you know, Jack does a very good job about the diversity of the audience here. And yeah, I mean, I generally, that's something that I've, you know, it's been the case for many, many years. It's rare, particularly now not working for very large corporations, that you'll talk at an event where you have the kind of dominance that I know that Dell have been getting stick for in the last couple of days on one of their events in Denmark. But I very rarely go to those kind of events or see that kind of audience split anymore.
What did you talk about today?
The talk is a kind of an ongoing palimpsest of a talk that I've been developing and talking about for the last couple of years, which is based on my obsession with attention. When I was working for the BBC and Channel 4 and New Media, I really struggled hard to try and find a language of talking about the way that people were changing their engagement with content over new media platforms without talking about platforms. I found the quickest way to turn an audience off was to talk about the next new thing. You know, it's like this new thing that everybody has to learn. There's a certain kind of ennui if after about 5 years of doing that people just basically stop listening. So I tried to find a way of talking about these changes without talking about technology. And so I talk about stories, I talk about audiences, and I talk about attention, and about the role of attention as being the kind of feedback loop between storytellers and the audiences, the way that we understand the power or the impact of our stories. And what I've been doing, particularly in the last couple of years, is looking historically at how the way we measure attention has changed from the measuring of attention using applause in musical and opera in the 18th, 19th century, to the development of ratings around early TV and radio networks in the 20th century, the role that charts played in the distribution and marketing of music and film, the role of points in games, which is something I'm, you know, very beginning of researching at the moment, and now the patterns of attention, the way that nowadays we are creating content for ecosystems, you know, run by Apple, Amazon, Google and Facebook, that are really looking for very, very, very granular patterns of attention and using that as a way of selling our attention to advertisers.
You've got a lot of historical research being included, and I particularly liked your reference to the oldie worldie black hat SEO guys.
Yes, it's one of those, what's lovely about researching these kind of issues is you occasionally find, you know, these amazing parallels to modern day, but 200-300 years ago. And I can't remember who first connected me to the claqueurs. But basically, if you were running an opera or a music hall in the 19th century, you would have a contract with an agency, a claque agency. And the claque would be a group of people who would learn your piece by heart and organise a series of interventions in the audience to try and essentially gain the applause. They were like SEO merchants. They would be there to try and provoke a certain kind of response of feedback, a certain kind of acceleration of attention in the audience. So you would have the chef de claque who would organise the claque for that particular piece. You would have the chatouliers or ticklers who would nudge the audience and tell them when a good bit was coming up. You would have the rieurs or laughers who would laugh heartily at the jokes, the pleureurs, mainly women, who would cry, and then the biseurs who would lead the encore. And I love the idea that, you know, when I say to people applause was a metric for attention, people think, well, actually it wasn't bad. But it was. The business of musical and opera was based around applause. You know, the success of pieces of work, the word of mouth, the reviews, the kind of economy around content in that era was built around applause. And so because it was economically important, there were ways of cheating it. There were ways of gaming the applause, just as there was payola around radio and TV, around music. You know, the kind of endless gaming of scheduling strategies around ratings. Every time there's been a way of measuring attention, it's affected and created ways of cheating that metric as well.
There's going to be an audience experiencing the content that's created throughout your research and has been for the last couple of years and will continue to do so, both in your online engagement, in the conference talks like this as it evolves and continues to grow. When you put it in a book, a paper book, and turn it into an object as such.
Yeah.
Does that kill it?
It's been something I've been thinking about because, you know, a lot of the work I'm doing with clients is we did a piece of work for Favour and Favour. I'm working for different publishers with Story Things, my company. And a lot of that is about understanding new ways of creating relationships between audiences and storytellers. And the book is a really important part of that. I don't think the book is, or any physical object, has diminished in the power and the kind of impact it has on audiences. But what you do around that is getting more and more important. So for me, it's a case of when is the right moment to launch an object around this, and what is it? Is it a Kindle single? Is it a series of Kindle singles? You know, is it could I release one a week for kind of 6 weeks? I mean, what is the pattern of attention I want around the book? So it's less about the object and more about what pattern do I want to create? Do I want to create a pattern where I'm talking about this for a year? Do I want to particularly create a pattern that could be shared in countries like America and stuff, where I've not really done that at the moment? So for me, the book is less important as a kind of cultural object as what it becomes in terms of a pattern. So I haven't really made that decision yet about what the book will be or when it will happen.
Then make it a part of the research and as you're on Speaker's Corner reading your book, it's also being released and serialised, you're blogging it and everything.
I know a few people who set up programmed tweets so that they tweet points of their talk when they're doing talks, and it's stuff like that I'm really fascinated by. And I should have done that today, because I mentioned a few things that people are asking for afterwards, and then I tweeted saying here's the links to the things I mentioned, and yeah, I might start doing that. So I'm kind of, you know, that is the really interesting thing for me. I have to eat my own dog food. If I'm talking about how we are telling stories differently, then yeah, the book has to be told in a very different way.
Fascinating. Where can people go online to find you?
I am at Matlock, MATLOCK, on Twitter. And I have a personal blog, test.org.uk. Very proud to have a four-letter domain. Booked that one in 1998, very early. And my company is storythings.com.
Thanks very much.
Thanks.